Welcome to The Clever Cookster, your ultimate window into the kitchens of the world's best cooks. I'm your host, Cara Boda. Our guest today is Matthew Prescott, author of Food is the Solution, What to Eat to Save the World. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me here.
Before we get started, a quick word from one of the sponsors that makes The Clever Cookster possible. Like the food we eat, not all mattresses are equal. But Pangea Bed's copper-infused mattress solves the problems common to inferior beds. Copper is antibacterial, preventing harmful microbes from growing in your bed. Plus, its heat-dispersing properties help your bed stay the perfect temperature. My Pangea bed feels safer and healthier than other mattresses I've slept on, and I love it. Head to PangeaBed.com to try it risk-free for 100 nights. Your bed will be delivered for free to your door in an easy-to-move box. Visit PangeaBed.com and use the code CLEVER for an extra 10% off. So tell us, Matt, what do we eat to save the world?
Oh, man, there's so many delicious foods that we can eat to save the world. You know, when we sit down for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, we make choices every day. And we can choose to eat foods that have a negative impact on the world, or we can choose to eat foods that make it a little bit of a better place. And, you know, all of the science says that eating more plant-based foods is the number one thing we can do to protect the environment. You know, to make a single egg, if you're talking about breakfast, it requires 53 gallons of water just to make one egg. If you want sausage, that's another 500 gallons of water. Cheese, that's another 50 gallons. Plant-based foods, on the other hand, are way less resource-intensive to make because we're not funneling crops through animals to get to their protein, but just eating the protein that's naturally found in plants. They're just much more efficient, much gentler on the earth, and better for us.
People have been talking more and more about how plant-based foods are good for our bodies, good for our health. But what's really interesting about this book is you focus a lot on the environmental impacts. In fact, the whole beginning of the book is split into different chapters that talk about the impacts on our water, on our earth, and on people who live in these places. Can you talk a little bit about some of the examples in the book and how this might really hit home for people to read about not just the impacts on us as individuals, but on the earth that we live in?
You know, last year I visited a place called the Eastern Shore of Maryland that's on the Chesapeake Bay. And I visited a woman there named Lisa and her husband Joe. And they live on land that's been part of Lisa's family for four generations. Totally normal neighborhood, you know, split-level homes, toys in the front yard, basketball hoops in the driveway. But they're being pushed off their land, not by drugs or high-rise condos or crime, but by chickens. Kind of peppered throughout their normal neighborhood are these massive warehouses full of chickens, 10,000, 20,000 birds at a time. And, you know, I saw the hordes of flies. I saw the buzzards flying overhead ready to pick off the dead birds along the road. I smelled the stench in the air. And, you know, I experienced all that one day. Lisa and Joe, they have to live with it every day. Every minute of every day, 130,000 chickens in this world are raised and slaughtered. And there's a huge problem about where to put all those animals. And so they end up in neighborhoods like Lisa's. And, you know, these warehouses emit huge amounts of toxic gases into the air. They make it miserable for residents to live around. Massive trucks roll in and out of the neighborhood every day. And it just takes an enormous toll on the people in the communities where these places are located. You know, I live in a major city. I don't see this stuff in my backyard. Most people who live in urban environments don't really experience this stuff. But for people in rural America, it's a real problem. In upstate New York, there have been complaints from people who turn on their water faucet only to find toxic sludge coming out because they live near a dairy farm. And the list just goes on and on. And so, you know, for me, when I eat, I want to avoid foods that cause these types of problems. And it's getting easier and easier and easier every day and more delicious every day, too. I mean, you can't walk, you know, a block in America now without being able to find soy milk and almond milk and oat milk and macadamia nut milk, and pretty much anything you can think to milk, somebody's milked it now. And that's a great thing because all these options provide us with much more sustainably produced food, healthier food, more humane food that we can choose from. You know, whether we eat only those foods or just incorporate more of them into our diet, it just makes it super easy to lend a hand.
One of the things that's great about this book and the approach that you take to eating more plant-based foods is that it's not an all-or-nothing approach. You can do things like Meatless Monday. You can work on incorporating a few meals into the week where you're substituting what might be your go-to meat-based protein to something plant-based. Can you talk about some of those easy swaps that people can make and just some of the easy ways that you can get into the habit of choosing plants more often?
Yeah, you know, the Wall Street Journal recently had an article out, and they started the article by saying, anchoring a plate with a massive hunk of animal protein is so last century. And that's totally true. The way we eat is changing in pretty dramatic ways, and one of those ways is people choosing more plant-based proteins. People are, you know, putting bacon on veggie burgers now. They're, you know, drinking an almond milk latte, you know, one morning and then in the afternoon having a whole milk latte. People aren't going whole hog on this stuff necessarily, but just incorporating more of these foods, and it's super easy. You know, you can now get Häagen-Dazs ice cream that's made from almond milk. You can get Ben & Jerry's ice cream that's made from almond milk. You can find plant-based burgers that have more protein than beef. You can find plant-based chicken made from, you know, products like pea protein, you know, the protein naturally found in yellow peas. You can find cheese made from nuts instead of cows. You know, whether you're shopping at Target or Walmart or Kroger or Safeway or Albertsons or your local food co-op, you know, as many people do nowadays, you can find this stuff everywhere. And, you know, the number one piece of advice that I would give to people is just try some of it out. You know, I didn't grow up vegetarian or vegan. When I was about 12, my sister came home from school one day and she proclaimed herself a vegetarian. And I'd never even heard the word before, let alone met one. And I had no idea what to do with it. So I would just make fun of her. I'd put my steak on the end of my fork and stick it in her face and make a mooing sound. But I eventually tried some of these weird new foods that she was eating, like bean burritos and bean chili. I know, totally foreign stuff, really bizarro world foods. And I liked it. I actually liked it. And, you know, one of the greatest benefits that I've seen in my own life from eating plant-based foods is just being opened up to a culinary world. Even aside from the social implications, just having my kind of like culinary horizons broadened by trying foods that I probably otherwise never would have even thought to try if I was just sticking with meat and potatoes every day.
Before we continue, a quick word from one of our Clever Cookster podcast sponsors. Looking for a breakfast that's worth skipping the snooze button for? Thomas's is the only breakfast brand that delivers a one-of-a-kind eating experience with its original Nooks and Crannies English muffins. There's nothing quite like that Nooks and Crannies texture, perfectly toasted to give you irresistibly crispy edges with a soft, warm center. Take it from a true fan. The secret to revealing that perfect Nooks and Crannies goodness every time is to gently pull your Thomas's English muffin halves apart. You can also use a fork to split them, just don't use a knife. Next, lightly toast each half and then top them right away with butter. Watch how the butter just melts and pools inside all those amazing little Nooks and Crannies spaces. It's a delicious burst of flavor in every warm, toasty, buttery bite. If you haven't had them already, you have to toast and butter some Thomas's Nooks and Crannies English muffins. They're truly like no other. And now, back to our podcast. And this isn't a cookbook just for people who are used to necessarily spending hours in the kitchen every day. It's a cookbook that's full of recipes that are really easy, that sort of combine some pre-made foods you can buy at the store with things that are really easy to have on hand in an omnivorous household. Can you talk about some of the sort of go-to meals that you think are really simple and are easy for anyone to work into their repertoire, no matter what their culinary expertise level?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I have been loving these days in the culinary world is the creative use of nuts to make dairy products. You know, one of the things in the book that I use is soaked cashews, where, you know, all you do is put cashews in water, wait a little while for them to get soft, blend them up in a blender, and you can make, you know, cheese for mac and cheese. You can make, you know, creamy sauce for Alfredo's. You can make all kinds of really amazing, you know, sauces and cheeses and other types of dairy products like that from just one ingredient, well, two ingredients, cashews and water, and, you know, maybe a little bit of salt or something. But it's creative, it's delicious, it's super easy, and, you know, it's got zero cholesterol, it's lighter on the planet, it's better for animals, and it's just interesting. It's a different taste and texture than cheese. And, you know, if you are eating cheese in your diet still and you just want something different, I highly recommend it.
What are some of the technological or scientific developments that you're excited about? I think one of the things we talk about a lot now, or I'm hearing a lot about, is burgers that are made of not protein, not meat, but sort of lab-grown meat. Can you talk a little bit about that and sort of what's on the horizon for meat that's not just what we think of as factory-farmed meat?
Yeah, I mean, there are so many different ways of getting protein nowadays. I mean, there's meat and dairy and eggs, typical stuff that we've been eating for thousands of years. but increasingly people are choosing protein that comes from plant-based foods like yellow peas or even carrots. There are brands of plant-based chicken products that are made from, you know, primarily or in part carrot protein. There are all kinds of really innovative things happening in the food industry right now to make sausage and cheese and even seafood out of these plant products. At the same time, you know, if we want real meat, you know, real actual biological flesh and muscle and tissue, that's on the horizon without animals. It's called clean meat, and like clean energy, it's much more resource, much less resource intensive to produce. Basically, you can take a biopsy the size of a poppy seed from a single chicken feather and create enough nuggets to feed an army or a village. In 1931, Winston Churchill, when he predicted what the world would look like in 50 years, so by the 80s, and he said that we shall escape the absurdity of growing an entire chicken to eat the breast or wing by growing these parts separately under a suitable medium. Well, it didn't happen by the 80s, but it's happening now. He was a few decades off, but it's coming down the horizon. There are a lot of really innovative companies working to create this. And again, actual biologically equivalent muscle and fat and tissue. It's meat, just with no animals involved.
One of the things that I love about going to vegan restaurants or reading vegan cookbooks today is that often it's not just about taking away categories of food that you're used to eating, but introducing things that maybe aren't part of a lot of people's diets, things like sea vegetables or fermented foods. Can you talk about some of the things that you sort of added to your diet as you became vegan and that people might be excited to learn are things they don't even know about yet?
Yeah, I've got two words for you: nutritional yeast. It sounds weird because it's got the word yeast in it. Trust me, it isn't like what it sounds like. It's delicious. They're little yellow flakes of magic that you can mix with water and make into cheesy sauces. I think the best use of it is just sprinkle it on a popcorn. It's kind of like Parmesan cheese. It's got like a tangy Parmesan cheese-like
it's
flavor.
It's that umami.
Yeah, it's that umami. It's that tang. It's that sharp taste. And, you know, I mix it with a little bit of salt and pepper and put it on popcorn, and I think it's wonderful. And that's a food that if I had not adopted a plant-based diet, I probably never would have even heard of before, let alone tried. And so, yeah, I think the greatest thing about just opening your palate up to some of these foods is that you get to explore new foods that are wonderful that you just might not have ever thought of.
So we're coming up on Earth Day, and that's traditionally sort of the moment in the year where people think, oh, okay, we should save water. We should think about what's good for the Earth. But what are some things we can do all year round, both in our diets and outside of our diets, to help the Earth a little bit, to participate in some of those things that we think about during Earth Day, but we can actually be thinking about all the time?
You know, I think the number one thing that people can do is to look at their diet, which is why I wrote this book. You know, the book is titled Food is the Solution, because it really is. It impacts so much of the world around us. We, you know, those of us who are fortunate enough to have a steady source of food in our life are, you know, fortunate enough to eat three times a day. We do it all day long. You know, we consume a lot. And what it takes to get different foods to our tables is, you know, really incredible. And so by just choosing more sustainably produced foods, we can make every day Earth Day. In fact, we can make three times a day Earth Day: breakfast, lunch, and dinner, any snack that we eat. And more people are doing it. You know, millions of people all over the country now are trying Meatless Monday. We're eating smaller portions of meat. We're moving meat from the center of the plate to the side of the plate. We're trying one or two veggie meals a day. People are doing this stuff, and it's having a tremendous impact, which is why, you know, I was fortunate enough when producing this book to be able to, you know, garner content and endorsements from, you know, the heads of virtually every major environmental organization. You know, there's an essay in the book from the head of Greenpeace, from the head of the Sierra Club, you know, from chefs like Jose Andreas and other people who know that we've just got to change the way that we eat and that we can change the way that we eat.
Matt, it's such a beautiful book, and it has not only incredible photos and incredible recipes, but so much information that I think is really useful to share during Earth Day and all year round. So thank you so much for coming to talk with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Check out the book, Food is the Solution, What to Eat to Save the World, with 80-plus recipes for a greener planet and a healthier you. And tune in next time on The Clever Cookster for more tips and tricks from the kitchens of the world's best cooks.